All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, now shifting our focus over to the energy sector, mostly oil and natural gas, with Dan Steffens. Dan is the president of the Energy Prospectus Group. And Dan, I don't want to spend too much time on the oil or natural gas prices because, quite frankly, those continue to be extremely boring in my eyes. Crude, yes, it's risen a little bit up to, as we're recording this, around $65 a barrel. But I think you can still make the argument looking at a longer term chart that it's still in just a gradual downtrend. And natural gas, as we're recording this, right around $3, which again, this year, range bound to down again. So I do want to get more into some of the stocks and what stocks are maybe garnering a bit more attention, what the companies can do to get some more interest in those stocks. But quick comment, oil and natural gas, Dan, is anything going to change in the near term in the pricing environment that, again, has been boring?
Well, I think oil is, there's so many political, geopolitical risk factors. I think when people realize that OPEC Plus raising their quotas is not really increasing production or increasing their exports, they just raise their quotas and half the countries can't produce up their quota. But the other thing, I mean, this war in Ukraine is not ending anytime soon. I think it only ends after there's a very long ceasefire period they can both agree to. But as of right now, there doesn't seem anything. And, you know, on Tuesday at the UN, Trump basically just said, Europe, it's tag, you're it, and we'll sell you weapons. We're not going to give you weapons. We'll sell you weapons, and you should give them to Ukraine if you think they can win, and let them try to win their deal back. So that doesn't sound like me anything. And then you got Iran still talking about wanting to keep enriching their uranium. I don't think that's settled. And the U.S. has positioned several warships off the coast of Venezuela. So what's going to happen there? There's just so much unknowns. But IEA, like 2 weeks ago, IEA puts out a report. It's almost like a total reversal. I mean, this is the same organization, the super left political organization, IEA, that's been telling people last year that we were at peak demand and you should stop investing in oil projects. Now they're saying if we don't spend at least $600 billion a year, we're not going to be able to meet future demand. So I don't know. There's a lot going on and it just has to work its way through. But I do think there's some special situations in the individual companies that we probably should talk about.
Well, Dan, let's go there next, because there are companies that have growth catalyst, or they have something in their pipeline of projects that they can develop more wells, or there's some acquisitions we can get into. Let's maybe kick it off with a company we were talking about off mic, and that is Crescent Energy under the ticker CRGY and their acquisition of Vital. And basically, this gives them more run room, and we're in that interesting period before the deal closes and before analysts have a couple of quarters to do the math. So give us your upside case here on this larger pro forma company.
Yeah, for one thing, I've been following both of these companies for quite a while. Crescent Energy jumped onto my radar screen when they bought out Lone Star Resources, which I really like that deal. They got some big money behind that company. KKR is a big private equity firm that's kind of behind that company. But also, I've been following Vital, and I've been thinking that Vital is grossly undervalued for a long time. But I think part of it is it's headquartered in Tulsa, and I don't know why, but the Tulsa-based companies don't ever get much love from the Wall Street gang. Maybe nobody wants to travel to Tulsa or something. Anyway, but you know, one of my most highly respected energy analysts, Neil Dingman, put out a new report here on Monday. And he had Crescent Energy at the top of the list of companies that he's rating now as outperform. And it is free cash flow positive. And the good thing, this is a big deal for, by the way, this deal is valued at $3 billion. It's a stock for stock deal, but they're assuming all the debt of Vital. But when it's combined, it's going to have a decent balance sheet. They're going to immediately sell, they say, $1 billion worth of non-core assets. They'll even shore that up more. They've already got those data rooms and everything ready to go. And it looks really good. But post-closing, it will be the ninth largest, based on production, the ninth largest upstream oil and gas company in the United States. That's a pretty big deal. I mean, you're up in there with, you know, at the heels of people like Devon and, you know, Matador and stuff like that that are in the, you know, top 10. So it's going to get this stock on a lot of analysts' radar screens. But I expect the merger to close in November. When it closes, it should have production of about 400,000 BOE per day and kind of balanced. And the good thing is, or I guess a good thing, but Vital, which I followed for a long time, they were from the end of the second quarter through the end of the th through October, they were going to complete about 38 new wells. They were running a bunch of rigs, and then they were just going to totally stop their drilling program, which was kind of interesting. So that tells me that this sale's been, going on. This negotiation's been going on for a while. So they should have all those wells online by the end of October. And what's really good, they've got over 90% of their oil hedged at good prices above the current oil price through the end of the year. So there's not a lot of price risk. And Vital doesn't pay a dividend. So the benefit, all that extra cash flow from that new production will go into the new Crescent, the new pro forma company. It's not going out the door to pay dividends. So they're going to get all the benefit of that cash. But it closed yesterday at $9.09. A first call's price target is $15. So you got about, 50, 60% upside if it just gets a first call price target. My valuation of Crescent Energy as a standalone company is $22 a share. Post-merger, and I have a detailed pro forma forecast model for it, is 2450, and the stock's trading under 10. I mean, this is a really good company, and it pays a nice dividend. And it's said it's definitely going to keep paying the dividend. Dividend yield right now is 5.2 or 5.3% on their dividend, 48 cents a year, 12 cents a quarter. But it's got a lot of running room out there. And Vital was a pure Permian Basin company. So Crescent Energy was South Texas, the Eagle Ford primarily. And you went to basin. So this gives them a third core area. And Vital has a pretty good acreage position in there. So they're going to have three core areas, a lot of running room. They can go. I think what they'll do though, they'll pull it back the amount of rigs run. I don't think they're going to jump into the Permian and start go drill baby drill crazy. And usually when you have a, I did this at Hess. So usually when you have a merger of this size, it takes a while for you to figure out, all the people you're going to keep. Get all the records set up in your systems and everything, get everything lined out because it is a big deal. And I really like it. I really like it. And I think the Wall Street gang will, especially if oil prices firm up. But it's got a lot of gas and got a lot of NGLs too. So it's a nice split. Yeah, if any of your listeners want to, ask me for it, I'll send them my detailed report on the company if they want it.
Okay, just send us an email if you want that report. But Dan, to that point of, let's say energy prices don't go up from here, this acquisition or merger, what I'm hearing is, yes, there's a lot hedged here. So there's that safety aspect. They can sell some non-core assets to build up some cash. Is this, in your eyes, more of a defensive play to protect the maybe merged company in case energy prices don't go anywhere? Or is this more about growth once everything gets sorted out?
Yeah, it's growth. Everything once it gets sorted out. I think them selling, if they can sell those assets for $1 billion, and their balance sheet's going to be in real good shape by the end of the year if they can do that, and then they'll have a drilling program and stuff. And they've been pretty on as a standalone company. They've been pretty aggressive. So, and they're backed by KKR, which they got a big company behind them. So I don't think they have any near term cash problems. And my valuation for next year is based on $65 oil for the whole year. And I think, yeah, could oil flop around in the low 60s for a while, but sooner or later, because US production is going to peak in December. And after that, you're going to see a decline in US production. We are not completing enough wells. EIA is that is their current forecast, peaking in December. And it always declines in the first quarter just because of weather-related issue. But I think once the world, there's other stuff coming on in Guyana. You hear people talk about all that stuff. And all that's doing is replacing the continuous decline in the oil mark and the oil production. I mean, all oil wells start depleting within months after they're online. So you got to keep spending money and keep completing new wells.
Well, Dan, we'll definitely keep our eyes peeled for the pro forma post-merger metrics on how this company continues to grow. But they do have a nice mix. They do have those hedges in place. And it is a nice name to do some due diligence on. Well, really, either name you could get in before the merger and let the company merge into the new combined entity. Another company we've talked about in the past, but it's definitely worth revisiting, is Diamondback Energy. traded on the ticker FANG. We've also talked about their spin-out royalty company, Viper Energy, Venom, so they have that snake theme. But this is a market darling. This is a company that has an incredibly profitable business, but they've announced some potential to do a mega power project soon. So I'd love you to dive into that and just an overview of Diamondback Energy.
Yeah, they on their last conference call, they kind of mentioned a power deal. And what's happening is they're building their own power plants and they're going to sell that power to either AI data centers or sell it into the grid. Another Riley Exploration Permian is doing that. But Devin, if Diamondback does it, they're going to be able to do it on a big scale. And I tell you, everything I'm seeing on these AI data centers is, I didn't even know this. There's two really big ones being built in Louisiana right now. And I didn't even know anything about, I didn't even know that until yesterday. But there's several being built in Texas, and they're just going to take advantage of that cheap gas out in West Texas as long as they can. But that would be a great deal for them because they've been getting really crappy prices for their gas out there. And you know what they're doing is they turned gas they were giving away for like $1, $1.25 or something, and turned it into electricity, which they can sell into the grid. So it's basically like you're converting gas into electricity and selling it for three times more than you'd be able to sell it as just gas. So it's good. And they produce a lot. I mean, what's unbelievable to me is Diamondback, as of yesterday, was trading below book value. That is insane to me. It pays a decent dividend. It's got buyback programs. It's got one of the highest free cash flow per barrel of the entire industry. It's undoubtedly got the most tier one core acreage in the Permian. I mean, there's just no reason whatsoever. And I think if there's just a change, a paradigm shift, let's say, and the Wall Street gang says, hey, you know what? Now it's okay to start investing in oil and gas again. Diamondback will be a must-own stock for every portfolio manager. It's that good, and with an unbelievably strong track record. And if you got Exxon or Chevron or somebody wanting to make a big deal, Diamondback will definitely be on their buy list.
With these power projects, because they're just being announced, they do take time to build out. What do you watch for to make sure that everything's going according to plan? And when do you see that the market starts reacting to some of this news? Because right now, Diamondback, it's really just gone sideways for most of this year.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. I mean, maybe they could pay more dividends or something. But if you really want dividends, the thing to do is buy Viper. They control Viper and they drop down a whole bunch of their mineral interest into Viper. So if you're looking for dividends, and Viper I love. In fact, Dingman announced in that same report, he put an outperform on Viper as well. But Diamondback's the more of the growth story and is a screaming takeover target at this price, if you ask me. But if you looked at, if you've never looked at it, I can tell you start digging into that one. It is a first-class outfit with a really strong track record. I mean, I've been following it literally for 10 or 12 years, and its growth has just been phenomenal.
Well, we'll definitely keep following along with Diamondback and Viper to see how things progress. But another company you've highlighted as one that has some potential to grow is Devon Energy, traded under the ticker DVN. Now, I think Dingman also noted that in his recent publication that you're talking about. So give us the skinny here, Dan. Why Devon Energy? What's the growth on tap?
Well, it has one of the highest rates of return when you look at its dividend plus its stock buybacks. And if you add those two together, it's got one of the better ones. I mean, it's buying its stock back in chunks. And the stock buybacks don't really seem to get as much credit as they should. But when you think about it, you keep reducing the amount of shares outstanding and the net value per share, really goes up. So you need to do it. And they're also highly respected as far as their technology and everything they're doing. They got some of the lowest operating expenses and stuff, and they're just doing really good stuff. I actually, when I left Tesla, I interviewed with them in Houston. They had a big office in Houston, but their main office is in Oklahoma City. And anyway, the guy I was interviewing with was 10 years younger than me, so I didn't think he was gonna hire me. So who knows? But anyway, it's closed recently around, let's say it's around 35 now. My valuation is $50, so I think there's a good $10 or $15 up. And the first call price target is 45. So other analysts agree with me that this thing's undervalued. Now it's like we were saying, Crescent will have production of 400,000. Devon has production of 845,000. It's one of the top three or four largest, highest producing independents in the country. So it's a big, big company. I like its production split. And it's not all in the Permian Basin. It has some Permian Basin, is Oklahoma, it has Uinta Basin, you know, it has other ones too. So its production mix is 46% crude oil, 27.5% natural gas, and 26.5% NGL. So if you read the EIA's last short-term energy outlook, one part of the long report on that is their discussion that this next year in 2026, they see oil and gas like totally separating from value standpoint. And they're predicting that the natural gas price goes up, where they're still predicting that the oil price goes down. I don't really agree with that analysis, but they've got a very aggressive. They think natural gas in the US by the end of next year will be $5.30 based on their formula when you get to the December. And if you put $5 into like Devon for their gas price, it's really, really strong. But it's got a, you know, it this year it's generating $2.7 billion in free cash flow this year, pretty much locked in by their hedging program and everything. And I'm using pretty, you know, conservative things in my forecast model, 2.8% dividend yield, and a very aggressive stock buyback program underway. They really believe their stock is grossly undervalued.
Curious your thoughts on that. This the dividend yield, yeah, under 3%, but a big stock buyback program. But again, this stock hasn't gone anywhere in a number of months, even dating back to late 2024. Would you like to see them pay a little bit more in terms of dividend to return some money to shareholders? Or do you think that stock buyback program is what's needed to hold the stock here?
Well, the reason these companies do the high stock program, their major shareholders want capital gains. They don't want ordinary income of dividends. That's why they do the stock buyback programs. Now, but I don't think you're getting the benefit of that in the stock price yet. But if, you know, if oil prices and gas prices do firm up and their year-end reserve reports show a lot more value for their proven reserves, then that's where you're going to get that benefit on a per share basis. So, and I like it. I personally like when they have, I think stock buyback programs re significantly reduces your risk because what they'll do, they go into the market when the stock's down and they buy it. So they set the floor on the stock price. So it significantly reduces the risk if they have stock buyback programs.
Well, Dan, I think a lot of people, if they dig into it under the hood, can understand the rationale for the stock buyback, not just from making the company more valuable per share, but also, like Corey was saying, kind of backstopping the valuation of the company as far as the share price level. But when you talk to most retail investors, they get into oil and gas stocks because of the dividends. So while the corporates may like the buybacks, most investors, when you talk to them about, hey, if you're going to get into a dividend paying sector, you can get into the utilities or you can get into the energy sector. Wouldn't it behoove a lot of these companies to beef up the dividends with that kind of interest from retail?
Yeah, I mean, I like them. Most of my money is invested in our high yield dividend portfolio, which has a yield of like 7.5%, 8%. So that's where I like to put my money. Yeah, I've got a few of these small caps that don't, you know, I'm still keeping interest in them because I think they got a lot of upside. But I'm moving more and more of my money into dividend paying stocks, and there's a lot of good ones out there. A lot of good ones. And midstream companies are great, but we've got some real good companies that pay monthly dividends in our high yield portfolio. Hey, a dividend one, do you want to talk? I got one more here on my list to talk about today. That's Northern Oil and Gas. And they do pay a really nice dividend, 6.8% dividend yield. The stock's at about $27 today. My valuation is 44. First call's price target is 33.30. So you got $6, $7 at least upside in the share price. Now, it's unique in that it is the largest publicly traded non-op company. They do not operate any of their properties. So they will go in and they're with Vital. They went in on a deal with Vital. They took 20% of it. Vital took 80% of it. They went into a deal with SM Energy, a really, really high quality company. SM Energy, where they took 20% and SM took the other 80%. And they're very well known. They've grown. I sort of found this thing, oh, 15 years ago, at the very start of EPG, 20 years ago, probably then, when it was really small. And you start seeing it. And they were really focused on the Bakken at that time. And you'd look at everybody's deal, and they were in their wells, like for 5 or 10%. And all these Bakken companies, they were 5% working interest owners. And they have just grown and grown and grown. And through some very Dingman says 15 in a row accretive acquisitions they've made since 2021. What a great time to be in a buyer was during that stage of the pandemic. And, they got some stuff at really good prices. And now it's worth a lot, I think. I think it's a screaming buy at this price for just for the dividend.
Dan, I'm curious, with your price targets here, can you give us some insights on what plays into that in terms of time frame, when you think that these valuations, these price targets could be hit, and how you factor in different, I guess, energy prices, oil and natural gas prices into these targets, just so we can get a better idea of your price targets, which are higher than where the shares are trading, when we could expect that to come to fruition?
Well, I mean, everybody's price target is going to be a little bit higher, but it's all based on what, commodity prices you use in deal. So I base mine on what I believe would be fair multiples. Now, the multiples are so much lower than they used to be. You see profitable companies that are free cash flow positive and they're trading for 3x cash flow. That's insane. When I was at Hess, I had an M&A team at Hess, and we were always looking at public companies for takeover targets. I ended up closing on three or four of them for like $3.5 billion, which in today's dollars would be like $8 billion. But we're looking to acquire companies that had a lot of development acreage. I call it running room. I just think if you got a company and they're great production, they've been having production growth year after year, but they don't have any more drilling locations. They've drilled up all their acreage. So they're going to have to go buy more or maybe pay a premium, or you're going to sell the company. You have to have running room in that's why you see the biggies like Exxon and stuff out buying companies, because there's no more open acreage in the Permian. They have to buy another company. They can't just go send out landmen to lease it up. But I look at the quality of the balance sheet. I look at not only their, debt level, but what is the debt? If it's all a revolver that can be called, or if it's all on debt that's got all these covenants that, look like they're going to break the covenants, that's a problem. That's what throws a lot of the littler companies into bankruptcy. Their ratios go out of compliance with their covenants. And, can they just service the debt? And so that's what you look at an EBITDA. So if the EBITDA is earnings before taxes, interest, and everything, that tells you how much money do they have to service the debt. So if that's no problem, if they got more EBITDA than above their taxes or their interest rate, then that's no problem whatsoever for them. But it's just running room. And so right now, all these companies, I was looking, and then also their hedging program, because I was looking at Magnolia today. Magnolia looks really good, but they don't have any of their production hedged. So I lowered their valuation multiple. I mean, it really looks good. Plays nice dividends, stock buyback programs, got a ton of nice running room. 8 to 10% growth, just locked in for years with the acreage that they have, but they haven't hedged any, and I don't know why. At a minimum, these companies should all be using costless collars. You can go out right now, and let's say the price is 65. You can go put on collars with $60 floors and $70 or $72 ceilings on them. What the heck? And then at least you got your downside. You should be definitely hedging enough to lock in the cash flow you need to cover your debt payments. That's a minimum for these smaller companies. But the ones we're talking about today, they're really big companies though, so they're in pretty good shape. And then it depends too. When you look at somebody like Crescent Energy, and I think people really don't look at this enough, look at who some of their major shareholders are. If you got great shareholders that are deep pocket shareholders, they're going to support you. They'll put in more money for stock or something like that. But anyway, but none of them, I'm not valuing any of these companies at more than 6x cash flow. And that would be even the super, super great companies. Let me see what I'm using here on Diamondback just for grins. Okay, on Diamondback, I am using 6x estimated cash flow for 2025 and 2026 annualized. That's how I get to it. And they are so strong financially, but with them, they deserve that because of the quality of their acreage. I mean, you hear about the tier one acreage in the Permian being all drilled up and running out of it. Not for them. They got years and years of drilling inventory out there, which makes them a really attractive takeover target.
Well, Dan, in lieu of all the different factors we've talked about that you look at for valuations, whether it's two companies coming together in the new pro forma company, whether it's the growth on tap for 2025 and 2026 and the multiplier you apply to that, whether it's the potential and torque they have to higher energy prices, I think a lot of investors have limited capital and they can only make a few choices. So if I could tie you down, I know you're diversified across the whole sector, but if I could tie you down, would you be more interested in nat gas or oil focused? And would you be more interested in growth from the small to mid caps or safety and income from the larger companies?
See, I think it's the perfect time to switch more of your portfolio to gas. Gas is down just because we've had a couple storage reports that are a little bit above the 5-year average. So I was on a podcast yesterday with U.S. Energy Development, and I pointed out, I said, so people are going, oh, storage is 200 BCF above the 5-year average now. Last winter, which was a mild winter, we had 4 weeks where we had draws from storage more than 100 BCF a day, BCF above the 5-year average, 4 of them. And that was a mild winter. And we had, it got mild. We were having increases in storage during March. Usually the draws last through March. I'm just telling you right now, if we have a La Nina winter, and that's the prediction right now, you can get that usually starts with a colder start to the winter and colder up where you guys live in Vancouver and more snow and everything. And you can get a couple cold weeks in December and that can wipe out. And think about this. This first quarter coming up, we're going to have 4 or 5 BCF more of LNG exports. Let's just say it's 5, which it should be when they're all online. If it's 5 BCF higher, that's 35 a week. You add 35 a BCF bigger draw every week compared to last year, we're going to be way below the 5-year average by the end of January. The way I look at it. And these projects are coming online. They are online and they are fast tracking these. I got from now until the end of 2027, so 2.5 years, you're looking at more than 8 BCF per day of additional LNG exports. That does not include the AI data center stuff. That does not include the 2 BCF a day increase in exports to Mexico during that time period. It's looking really strong for gas. So I right now recommend you switch over to gas. Look at the production mix of each company. And then you can also look at their hedging programs. Have they started to lock in some of these higher prices? Because right now, today, the January contract for gas right now that you can lock in is over $4 today. Now you could do a swap right now at $4.
Dan, I'm just curious because a lot of these charts that we're looking at, I think you could argue mostly range-bound trading within these stocks. Yes, they're paying dividends, but again, on the capital gains front, and maybe this is just the problem of oil and natural gas not really doing much, but any stocks out there that you're following that are just blowing it out of the water, the market is actually noticing and their stocks are breaking out to higher levels?
No, we talked about in-play last week. I cannot understand why people don't realize the importance of Delek becoming their major shareholder. That is more significant than the fabulous second quarter results. The company is paying like a 7 or 8% dividend yield. It's got tremendous growth potential, and it's just not yet getting. I mean, none of the Canadians are really getting the attention they should, but that's one that I really like now, and I've shifted more money into it. But I personally am in, and my portfolio has done quite well this year because I've invested in stocks that pay 7-8% dividend yield. So the dividend yield's making up for the okay, they're trading sideways, but I'm getting these great dividends that are just building up in the portfolio. So what the hell?
Well, and there's the side of it. Yeah, just wondering if there's anybody out there that's really catching your attention. Yes, employ has done very well. The last couple of weeks it's moved sideways, but again, it has really run since May, I believe. So look, I'm sure there are some other names out there, but right now it does sound like the type of environment where you can still be buying a lot of these companies as they're not breaking out, not feel like you're chasing them higher. And hopefully you get that better pricing environment in terms of oil and natural gas prices that continue to drive these stocks. But sounds like there's still a lot of M&A activity happening.
Yeah, there is. I think there's going to be. I think you're going to see more and more M&A activity. And see, a lot of companies do M&A activity near the end of the year because they want to get that deal closed before year end so they can include it in their year-end reserves. That always has something to do with it.
All right, well, Dan, we got to wrap it up here. Again, Dan Steffens, the president of the Energy Perspectives Group. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Hope you found it valuable. Our focus on metals in the first half and energy on the back half. Metal sectors sure are running. Maybe some of that money will start to rotate into the energy sector sooner rather than later, but always opportunities in both of these markets. Everyone, again, thanks for tuning into this weekend show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.